Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast maiden is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present, and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, peas. It's Kate here today. I am without Mandy, which is very sad. Everything's fine. She just had a slight hiccup at home, so it's just a solo pea. Because you know, I know how much you love the weather chat. It is absolutely divine in Melbourne. It's like 20 degrees today and sunny, so we are blissing out because tomorrow it's going to be 11 and raining. But very, very excited to tell you that I'm going to chat with Phil today. Phil is the CEO of Wallara and a parent of a child with a disability. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Kate. Great to be here on this beautiful Melbourne day.
Oh, beautiful.
Before it turns to crap tomorrow.
I know. It really, really is going to turn to crap tomorrow. And I think this will date the episode, but I'm a massive St Kilda fan and I'm going to the final on Saturday and it's going to be like 14 degrees and raining and I'm going to get very wet at the MCG.
Yes, yes. We're not through it yet, are we? But it's teasing us. Spring and summer are teasing us.
Yeah, yeah. I always say Melbourne's like the best weather flirt because you're like, yes, I'm in. And then no.
Yes.
No,
yes.
Tomorrow puffy jackets. The puffy jackets have not been put away. Mm. They are out for tomorrow. All right, Phil, I'm going to start with our three questions. The first question is, do you have music or a song or a band that either like pumps you up in the good times or helps you in the down times?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And music is so powerful. Mm. Without getting political, it makes me think about John Farnham and that song, The Voice, at the moment, which is getting a lot of attention.
Doesn't that ad make you weep?
It does. It really touched me, you know. Mm. I was watching that. I wondered how they'd done it, you know. I was curious, and the way they started in the 60s or the 70s or whenever that time frame is, and slowly I see marriage equality in there, and there's different things that they touch on through that story. I thought it was beautiful, and I know there are people who are saying, oh, they shouldn't be using music for this or that, but there's no doubt music is powerful. So for me, One of my favorite pieces of music, it's not very popular or commercial, mm-hmm. but there's a musical called Once.
Okay, haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's a movie and a stage musical. It's about a busker. Glenn Hansard is the guy who writes the music and plays the music in the film.
Okay.
It's a fabulous stage show, and it's called Once. So it's my favorite soundtrack stage show, piece of music that I go to. Beautiful.
How often do you reckon, how many times a year do you listen to that?
Well, it's on my playlist, and the key song from it is called Falling Slowly.
Okay.
Beautiful, and I play some bad acoustic guitar. And I worked it out.
Yes,
Kate, worked it out. I can play the little finger style on the guitar. So I probably go to that song a lot, but it's
awesome.
Beautiful.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to check it out. And if it's on Spotify, Annalise will put it on our two-piece playlist so everybody can
Excellent.
Hear it. Okay, one of our favorite questions, did you win any awards at school?
Well, awards at school. I got most improved or most likely to succeed, I think, for my cricket team when I was about 14. Now, I was a very committed sportsman as a kid, and I remember I was a fielder, and I would always walk in and do my best, But I always used to wonder, how come those guys are bowlers? And it seems like in cricket, the roles get allocated very early in life,
Yes.
And if you're not one of those, you're just out in the field, mm-hmm. and you better figure it out. And I would get in, and I was very good on my defense, but I was too scared to take a bloody swing and try to score any runs. And I found it very frustrating. And I remember after I got the award for most likely to succeed for my cricket team, I decided to quit.
Oh, why? You just thought, I am not this person. I am not most likely to succeed.
Yes, I'm getting rewarded for this, and it's driving me mad. Something's wrong. Yeah. So I moved then to basketball. That was my sport from then. And suddenly I found freedom of movement, and you could be in offense and defense, and there was some contact, and you could score, and you could take shots and miss without being out all bloody day.
That's true. I must admit, I love watching cricket. It's one of my favorite all-time sports, but I played basketball growing up too.
Oh, yeah, that was my thing. And I loved the sport. And so then I was very lucky, Kate, later in life to actually get a job in basketball.
For a Melbourne?
Well, no, I got even luckier. I worked with the NBA.
Wow.
Yeah, for 12 years. So I ran the NBA business in Australia and New Zealand, and then they shipped me and my wife to Singapore to run Southeast Asia, then Paris for a year, and then London for three, and then Hong Kong for four.
Wow.
So 12 years with the NBA, dream job.
Yeah, you must have seen a lot of basketball. Do you still follow it?
I do.
Yep.
I do much. I love the sport. And my son, who was born in London in 2000, so he's now 23, it was really fun seeing him fall in love with the sport and then go on and get the, make the state team and a US college scholarship. He had that whole, wasn't quite the fantasy thing because it was COVID, of course, so there were no marching bands and cheerleaders and all that. Yeah. It was all a bit weird.
Yeah.
But he played pro in the NBL for a couple of years, and now he's just switched across to footy.
Well, I think which one has more injuries, basketball or football?
Ooh, I would think football.
Yeah, I would
think
you
can
football.
Get hit from any direction, and there's a lot more contact. But there's certainly, I broke my nose a few times in basketball. There are certainly injuries in both. But
lots of fingers, I remember at high school in basketball.
Yes. So what did you love about basketball, Kate? What did you enjoy?
Well, I loved the fact that, I wasn't super athletic, but in any game, anybody could play a really pivotal role, but even if it was only for a short time. And I wasn't bad at getting goals. I wasn't good at a lot of other things, but I could do that. So if you're in the right spot and someone chucks you the ball, in 2 seconds it's in or half a second.
Yes.
And I love the speed of it. I just loved
the fast.
Speed. Basketball is fast. Yeah. It's not like soccer.
No. It's the opposite of soccer, isn't it?
It is.
Slow scoring, all that passing backwards and holding onto the ball. You're like, wow, basketball's the opposite. So
And they're both awesome.
They are. Well, you can enjoy all sports. So we're going to see how he goes moving into football. And Richmond was interested enough to sign him as a Category B rookie for a ruck. I think they love a big – he's 6 foot 10.
Yes,
so you can't teach height, Kate.
No, you can't. You cannot. You cannot. Although I was very good friends with Sam Mitchell. We're going on a footy talk here. For people who live in Victoria or Australia, follow AFL, they'll know that he played for Hawthorn and he's now their coach. And he was always told, "You are too short. You will never play footy."
Yes,
and
that's right.
He played
footy. Proved them wrong, didn't he?
Them wrong. But yes, you're right. You can't teach height.
Yeah.
And my final question: why are you a P?
Why am I a P? Well, I think that's because of my daughter. I think because Phoebe is 21, and Phoebe's is. Non-verbal, so it doesn't talk and has a moderate intellectual disability, very social, very curious, uses Auslan to communicate, but hears everything, in fact, too much most of the time.
Well, she's a 20-year-old girl.
Yeah. So that led me to, after working in sports like that, I was interested by disability.
Yep.
And I saw this job as CEO of Woolara, and I thought, gee, I don't know what they do. Or why they'd be interested in me. I know it's important work. I had no idea what adult services were or the sector. I didn't even really think of myself as a carer.
Wow.
So I knocked on their door, curious, and they took a risk on me. I was very lucky, and it's the best job I've had. So I've been in that role 13 years now, and I'm talking to you from the amazing Sage's Cottage Farm on the Mornington Peninsula, which is, I think, one of the best things or things I'm most proud about anyway. So we bought this farm in 2015. It's 40 acres, and it's run by 100 young people with disabilities and the public pouring through here 7 days a week, great cafe. So all the listeners, come on down.
Yeah, definitely. So for those of you outside of Victoria, Mornington Peninsula is really close to Melbourne. We've got an amazing freeway that runs down there. You have to pay for it, so it's not actually free. But it's really close to the city. Like, it's, I think, from my place to Mornington's like 35 minutes or 40 minutes.
Yep. Very accessible.
Yep.
But when you come up the driveway, you feel like you're out in the bush somewhere. Mm. We've got a lake, all the animals. And so the mission, Kate, with the farm and listeners, I remember thinking about all this. And often in the disability sector, we talk about going out into the community, accessing the community,
Isn't it?
And I thought, the farm here, the community come to us, you know. It's so nice to see them pouring in. And we never want to be known as that disability farm.
Yeah.
Because sometimes labels are dangerous and the mainstream community can then feel a bit, I don't know, awkward or whatever. So it's very much a community farm. And we're about 15,000 people a year now come through the farm and see our clients working at the farm in all the different jobs. And we feel that's a great way to normalize things to provide inclusion. And the farm's just such a great setting to do all that.
Wow. And so if we go back to, you've stopped working in basketball and you've decided to work in disability, maybe even back before that.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about Phoebe when she was little?
Yeah, sure. So Phoebe was born in Hong Kong, and I was running the NBA business in Asia Pacific. And, again, dream job. And our boy was about, you know, three or something. Mm. He'd been born in London. So Phoebe didn't present normally, if you like, right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we knew she was underweight and she didn't breastfeed. And so there were some milestones or things that she didn't walk till she was four and a half.
Right.
Didn't get up and just scooted around on her knees. And no one could really tell us what was going on.
Okay.
In Hong Kong. And then it was a pediatrician back here in Melbourne who helped us sort of get an answer and started talking about, we all heard phrases like global developmental delay, you know.
Yes.
I remember the first time I heard that, I thought, oh, a delay, okay. And then I thought, now if a train's delayed, it still gets there.
Up.
It's just
That's
a
right.
bit slow, isn't it, you know?
Yes.
And language can be well-meaning sometimes, but vague, and that's unhelpful. And so, you know, I learned more about it, and And so Phoebes has a, you know, mild to moderate intellectual disability, mm-hmm. cognitive impairment, whatever language you want, mm-hmm. you know, but very social and is nonverbal.
Yep.
So that's her thing. And she's very healthy, very happy, very mm-hmm. social. She went to Frankston SDS. I'm a fan of special schools.
Yes. There's many fans on this podcast. Yes.
I get very upset mm-hmm. with some advocates who want to close them all mm-hmm. and think that the magic of inclusion is the only answer for everybody. Mm-hmm. And they want to – I find it cancel culture that they want to shut down anything that doesn't meet their measure of what inclusion has to look like. So, again, yeah. I think that's well-meaning, and I'm pro-inclusion too, but – I want choices.
Well, I think
for
we want
everybody.
To be pro-choice, don't we? So
pro-choice. That's right. Respect choices. You
where
know,
your child or where you want to attend. You know what works for your family, and people move between them. They're like, oh,
that's
I want
right.
mainstream.
Isn't that
I
great?
Want this. It's awesome. Yep. It's how it should be. But I think it's really funny because, you know, we don't say, well, nobody should have a book club. Because book clubs are only 8 people and only 8 people are reading that book and talking about it. We're quite happy yes. for people to have a little group that they feel comfortable with
yes.
and they really like. But when yes. it comes to education, we want everybody in the same,
that's
you know,
right.
little box. And the education, you know, Mandy and I speak about this a lot. Well, it's awesome. It's broken. So
yes.
we need yes. different – I mean, it needs a big reno, but we need different
yes. –
different schools for different kids.
Yeah. And I mean, today we hear about school refusers, you know, people with anxiety and things who aren't going to school and special teams that are being set up to sort of provide a better environment for them to catch them and to sort of keep them engaged. And that's a special school. You can call it whatever you want,
yes,
but that's what
right.
that is.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
I see.
And what about the high – I always think like, you know, the select entry schools that you've got to
yes.
– you know, that's a special school.
Yes, yes.
That's definitely a specialist school. There's ones yeah. that are just about science, ones that are just about music.
Yes, yes. And not only are those schools – you know, special schools, they're segregated
very
as well
segregated.
Because we hear the word segregated thrown around a lot. That's a very loaded word.
Mm.
And the people, the inclusion movement, as they call themselves, use that word selectively. But so my answer on schools is, look, there's boys' schools, girls' schools, special schools, co-ed schools, religious schools. You know, there's all these different settings.
Mm.
And if they all agree to give up their choices and have one option where we all hold hands and sing Kumbaya, then I'll give up my choice then, you know. But until
that's right.
I want equality. I want choice. And now with my son, I had those choices. And
yes.
He went to a public primary school and then an independent high school. And I hope I made the right choice. Or who knows?
Yeah, you know? You never know.
But the idea, these advocates think that school choice is so important that as a parent, that decision should be taken away from me because I'm going to choose some soft option which is going to set my kid up for a secondhand life. I get irate at that.
Yeah.
I think that is so offensive and arrogant and condescending and colonial, Kate. I'm going to throw the C word in there. It sounds colonial.
I know, and I just think that – it is, there's just so many amazing options. And, you know, I think it would be great if all schools catered to all students, right? That is the dream.
Yep.
And then you got to choose which one you wanted. And I would like schools to be closer together geographically. You know, you've got your selector entry music school right next door to your specialist school for children that have intellectual disabilities. And next door to that, you've got the soccer school. How amazing. This would be
sharing ovals, resources. Yes.
This I would be on
Wouldn't
board
that be
with.
Great?
Yeah.
Me
yeah.
too.
Anyway,
me
well,
too.
We'll change that in a couple of years.
Good.
All right. So now let's talk about Willara. Tell us what it is.
Yeah, sure. So I remember knocking on the door in 2010 thinking, what is it? And so they provide services to adults, you know, post school leavers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it started in 1959, like a lot of these local services did.
Yes.
And it was called something a bit horrific then, of course, like the Dandenong Mentally Retarded Children's Welfare Association
or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
And the pioneers at that time, it just amazes me. You know, there was no funding, no organization. It was families and local businesses that fundrose and, you know, did amazing things working out of no resources. They were incredibly entrepreneurial. Anyway, they we owe a huge debt to them for getting things started. Yeah. So today we started in Dandenong. That was our home. And we've branched out a bit now, and I'm down here near Frankston. It's not just because my daughter went to Frankston SDS and I live in Mornington, but that does help.
Yes.
Does help.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of people like to get a job local to where they live.
Yes,
I think that's,
yes.
You know, that's yes. Not just you. And yeah. So I know that I have a few links with Alkira, and I know that there's such a long history of parents like literally putting their own blood, sweat and tears in the building. Like there was nobody else to do anything. Mm. It's so powerful when you go there and you realize that. But I want to know, how do you cater for those awesome people that have been in that service for 40 years and the 19-year-olds that are coming through now who want to be YouTubers and, you know, how that must be a really tricky juxtaposition because not many workplaces have people there for that long.
You're exactly right. It's a fascinating part of these organizations because people will say, okay, Phil, how long are the clients, as we call them? And there's no great word for that, but, you know, we like to think we provide professional services and so clients are free to entitled to that level of excellence. Anyway, and I'll say, well, it depends, you know. There's a guy here at the farm who won't mind me telling his story. He's 65 in December,
right?
And he works here at the farm, loves the outdoor work. He came to Alara at 4.5.
See?
4.5. We were in records of people that have been. And Kate, it's so beautiful because his brother told me the story. You know, he goes, Phil, you know Terry's at the farm. And most of the kids at the farm here, I say kids, you know, it's 18 to sort of 30. And Terry's
65. When you're old like us, they're kids.
Yeah, that's right. So I noticed Terry and I thought, okay, that's good to see a different age group coming through. But it was a bit unusual. And then his brother said to me, Phil, Terry came to Alara when he was 4.5. And I've got these old black and white photos, like a lot of these organizations have, of those kids coming in the first group in 1960 or something. When we ran a sort of a special school because there was nothing else around, right? He was with Willara through that time, and then he moved away maybe to another – he's in a group home somewhere in Frankston with another service, but he heard that we were running the farm, and he always loved outdoor work. And I've got these photos of him in the 80s when he's holding mowers and things and, you know, doing those. And now he's back at the farm, and it is a privilege to play such a role in people's life. And so, on the other end of the spectrum, Kate, as you know, it can be much shorter than that.
Yeah.
There's a kid, again, another young man who was in my daughter's class all the way through school, and he came to Alara for 18 months.
Yep.
He drove up the bloody driveway to attend our service when he left school. He was that high functioning, if you like.
Yep.
And he's now got an apprenticeship at Mornington Golf Club.
Yeah, beautiful.
You know?
Yep.
Fantastic. So there's a whole spectrum there, whereas we're there for them as long as we think we're adding value and they want us to be.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to give us like a really brief, like what were the original services and what do you have now?
Yeah, sure. Originally, it was sort of it grew into a hostel on Potter Street, Dandenong. There were about 35 people living together in a big hostel with not a lot of bathrooms and some workshops and things, pretty much on one block of land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a congregate, institutional, whatever you want to call it.
Yep,
that's how a lot of these services started.
Yeah.
And then they decided to, okay, you know, Kew Cottages was getting broken down and suddenly people were realizing, big, you know, we needed to break things up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they Jeff made Kenner. This math. Yeah, a bit of that. Massive transformation. And when I got there, they had pretty much sold 2/3 of that land to someone else.
Right.
And Winteringham does aged care for people who are homeless or heavily financially disadvantaged.
Right.
And they were going to come into that piece of land, and then we were dispersing. We were grabbing tennis clubs and scout halls and all the community buildings we could find.
Right.
And the people in the hostel were moved out into more regular housing, you know, where they were only with maybe 4 people. They got to choose who they were with and they were in a shared home. So today, so that all happened in sort of 2010, huge transformation.
Huge.
And I landed in the middle of it was sort of a building site. It was about 6 months away from finishing. And today we work with about 650 clients.
Right.
we've got three streams. So there's accommodation.
Yep.
We support people in independent living.
Yep.
And my daughter will move out of home one day, of course.
Yep, yep.
And I would love her to move into with a friend or two in some sort of shared house like that.
Yeah.
Work is a big stream for us. We provide employment to around 230 people across horticulture, warehouse services, and we've just taken over an organisation in the north of Melbourne, in Brunswick and Reservoir.
Ooh,
up
the
in
cool,
that corridor.
Funky areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, you all are becoming vegans and...
That's right. And so that's the work stream. I mean, some of our work customers include St Kilda Football Club. Is that your team?
It is my team. Very much my team.
Kate, have you ever bought a beanie or a scarf?
I have,
or anything
every
online?
Season. Yes.
Well, now I can inform you that product would have been picked and packed and shipped to you by one of our clients.
Ah, well, I'll value them even more.
There you go.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All their merchandise is in our warehouse, and we store it and pick and pack and ship it, and we've been doing that work for St Kilda. They just extended us for three more years. Great. We mow lawns at Moorabbin and Seaford. They pay us for all that, so they're a great work provider, and we're really feel part of their organisation. They're great.
Oh.
And the last stream of services is really day service is a horrible phrase and means nothing. So we call it learning and lifestyle, but it's really skill building, work pathways, skill building. The farm has 80 clients here that are, including my daughter, who feel like they belong at the farm and have important roles at the farm, but they're not in paid work. So we've got people in media in about 9 locations across the southeast. So we've expanded a lot, but in dollar terms, we're about $30 million a year,
wow.
Kate, and that feels big to some people, but scope is $650 million a year.
Yeah, that's right. Well, 600 people, it's not really that much when you divide it, is it?
That's right.
And staff and everything else.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
For people who are listening who have no idea what we're talking about, when you say they're not in paid employment, what do you mean?
Yes. Well, across Australia, there are 16,000 people in supported employment.
Mm-hmm.
So as I knew nothing about this when I started out, so I was fascinated to learn. And I want more and more people to explore and understand this. So there's open employment, which is more the regular mainstream employment, full award wages, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a level called supported employment, which has existed for a long, long time. And it's basically a discounted wage. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine if you were tasked, and there are 16,000 people in jobs.
Right.
And their wages, this is separate from their disability support pension,
mm-hmm.
separate from their NDIS money.
Mm-hmm.
And they earn wages.
Yes.
And it provides work for people. In my view, there are some people who want to shut all these jobs down because everyone should be paid, you know,
mm-hmm.
$22 an hour, regardless of how many widgets they move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is, you know, a lovely idea. But in the reality, all those jobs would be, or the vast majority of these jobs would be lost. So you have people earning on average about $8 or $9 an hour for the hours that they choose to work. They get out of bed. They feel productive. They have pride. They're working with St Kilda. And now these are award legal wages decided by the Fair Work Commission.
Right, yeah.
So if anyone ever tells you that it's illegal and it's slavery and it's, you know, it's $2 an hour, it's a sweatshop, there are those claims. But please, if you want to find out about it, come on down to Woollahra and I will proudly show you why we are so proud to offer these jobs.
Yeah. And I suppose especially for people who are transitioning through. It's like being in a trade, isn't it? Like you're supported. You're usually living at home with your parents. You get the tradie discount on your ute and your petrol and all of that, and you earn less because you're getting a skill. So yep. I'm assuming for some of your amazing clients, it's just a gateway to them. It's like a couple of years after school and then,
Again, a bit like Terry, who I mentioned before, some people, it can be a stepping stone to another job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And we see some people moving into open employment.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, they want to work with people like them in a very supported environment. And I got to tell you, open employment is not for everybody.
No.
Just like open school is not for everybody, you know. Yeah. So I am super, super proud of these jobs. I'm so glad that Australia's Fair Work Commission sees the need for this tool and for these jobs. It's not easy. Again, I love the idea of inclusion, but inclusion means giving everybody who wants to work the chance to work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to these families who are in these jobs, and I'm one of them, you know, it's not about, would I like my kid to earn some more money? Always, probably any job that they're in.
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't feel a bit underpaid?
Yeah.
If they're getting $7 or $8 or $9 an hour and their pension and their NDIS money and they're feeling productive and useful and all the things that a job provides, I think that is a great outcome. And that to me doesn't seem, if they're doing about half the regular output, and I know those language might be offensive to some, but you know, you get about half the regular wage and your other stuff and you're in employment, and I'm totally cool with that. The more jobs, the better.
Oh, definitely the more jobs, the better. And I know it's one of those areas where there are other, you know, like I think childcare is vastly underpaid. I think certain levels of a lot of care, you know, that is often heavily women. But there are a lot of other jobs too that are underpaid. And I think as a society, not all of us, but a lot of us would love those jobs to earn more. Like, you should be getting another $10 an hour, but we don't know where the money comes from.
Yes.
And I think that's the problem. So, I have not got a master's in economics, so I have no idea. I know there are people much smarter than me that can, you know, say it needs to come out of this part of the pie. But for now, I suppose we have to work with what we've got, and we can all look forward to an amazing future where hopefully everyone gets paid more. But I think for me, if this is for me, not for my children, but if I get up and do a job that I really love, there is such a rewarding sense of achievement for the day. Now, of course, I need more money too. The cost of living crisis is revolting at the moment.
Yes,
it's really tricky time to be a single mum. But there's also something amazing about loving what you do.
Oh, it is the mental health that comes from all of that. And haven't we learned that, I would hope, as the Western world, if you like, you know, we outsourced a lot of jobs into Asia, didn't we, you know, and we thought we were being really clever, and suddenly people didn't have jobs anymore to go to. And what's the impact of that? Feeling useless, not needed. So everyone needs to be occupied and busy and feel proud. And I'm also proud about the sort of work we are able to win. Now, no offense to, and I love seeing all work for people with disability, but often you'll say, okay, well, we run op shops, or there's a tip drop off before you get to the tip where we do some of that recycling and that works great. But I love the idea of working for St Kilda Footy Club on their merchandise, for example. We work with Maya. We work with, you know, we handled Mary Kay Cosmetics for across Australia and New Zealand, you know. Big brands that people go, wow, you guys are involved with, you're part of that supply chain, not doing some, you know, sideline
and
sort
you
of
can business. See it. Like when you go to, when people go to the footy, they're like, oh, yeah, that's St Kilda. I work with them. Or that's, you know, my sister or brother uses Mary Kay Cosmetics. I work with them. So it's a recognisable brand. It's not just, you know, you're doing something that nobody, you can't talk about
that's
it
because
no one
knows. Invisible. And if I've got one thing, Kate, on that, thank you for the time here, but for the listeners, here's the one thing that I would love to see change. What if I said to you that if you're on the disability support pension, you're allowed to earn $90 a week before you start losing your pension?
Yep.
Okay. And when you lose it, it's at 50 cents in the dollar.
Right.
So, for that $91st that you earn, you actually only get 50 cents, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. you lose 50 mm-hmm. cents at it, and it starts to phase out. So it's effectively a 50% tax rate kicks in, right? And I know plenty of people who do work with us who think about, they'll say they'll only work 2 or 3 days a week because they don't want to lose any of their pension.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
And what if I said to you, and that's, we all think about how what makes us better off and decide how much is it worth working or not, right? Yeah, you know, extra days.
Yeah.
Now, what if I said to you that the aged pensioner can earn $150 more than the disability pensioner before that tax kicks in?
Would you be outraged about that? Yes, I am outraged.
Do you think it should be the same for those two pension holders?
Why is it not?
So the aged pensioner group have lobbied on this for a few years now and said, we want to keep, we should be incentivized to work more. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't lose our pension benefits so quickly. And there is a aged pensioner work bonus. You can look it up, anybody. And all I would love to see is disability pension holders have exactly the same treatment. It is outrageous.
Oh, I did not know that. We'll have to get on to Bill Shorten. Isn't he the person that, you know?
He is the person.
Yeah.
He is the person.
Wow. So... yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Huge difference. And that's a lot of money.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. That is the difference between going to the footy or, you know, going out for dinner or getting a coffee. That's a lot of money.
So let's incentivize and just like an AIDS pensioner. Yeah, I love the fact they can go and earn some money without suddenly getting whacked with 50% tax rate. And it should be exactly the same for the disability support pensioner.
And if you work for... you know, an extra 4 hours, and then the next week you don't, does it just automatically adjust?
Yeah. You stay under that threshold, but, you know, I talk to our clients often and they're all nervous, of course, about that. They're limiting their work to maximize their financial position. I get that. They're nervous about losing their health card or concessions if they move on. We need more freedom for people with disabilities to work more and incentivize them, reward them, and not have them in fear of losing, you know, entitlements over time.
And I think for a lot of parents of children who have disabilities, they've fought so hard for those entitlements that it's really, I think the whole family is on board with this is precious, precious, precious money. And so it's probably, it's a real head thing, you know, to get your head around the fact that, oh, we're going to change the way we're getting that money, we're earning our money. It's probably really hard.
It is really hard. And, you know, and that move from supported employment into open employment that, you know, we all encourage, you know, it's a real risk.
Okay? Yes.
The reality is that is a risk. And some families and people will go, well, I want to try it, but what happens if it doesn't work out? Can I come back into this place, you know? Because sometimes it's a rougher world out there, you know, that's why it's called supported employment because that's why we exist.
We wish it wasn't. We wish it wasn't a rougher world.
Yes.
But I think you talk to any parent, not just parents of children or young adults with disabilities. The thought of your child ending school, going to uni, getting a job, going to TAFE is really scary because whilst we are really happy for them to blossom and bloom and, you know, maybe go and play at Richmond Football Club, we're also terrified of them failing or people bullying them or losing that, you know, safe environment. And then I think when you add disability in, it's even trickier. So I think it's a natural thing for parents to feel like that.
Yeah. And we're not wrapping them in bubble wrap, you know, and denying them. These people that will say that my daughter is sort of living this segregated life, you know, all her friends have disabilities. And I'll go, well.
And also, what is so wrong with the majority of your friends having a disability?
Exactly.
What a terrible thing to say.
I know. You know what that is? You know what that is, Kate? That's ableist.
Yeah, I know. It's so weird because it's coming from the same camp. Yes, it's so confusing for me. But I always say to people, when I had twins, I had three children and then I had twins. And I knew how to be a mum. I knew how to breastfeed and I had a mum's group. And then all of a sudden, my parenting experience was completely different. Having twins was very – people would say to me who didn't have twins, it's just two babies. And I'd be like, no, it's really not. And within a year of having twins, I found a whole new group of friends. I didn't lose my old friends, but that's how Mandy and I met. because okay. actually that world was so different. It was the same. We were changing yep. nappies, but it was so different, right?
Yep.
And then yep. when my children had learning issues and disabilities, I found another group of people, but I needed yep. them and they needed me because yep. my journey was so different now. And yep. you couldn't have told me that I would want to change or get new friends for these things. I would not have believed you. I didn't believe you when I was pregnant with the twins. I didn't join any twin support groups because I thought, I know how to be a mum. And yes, then yes. a couple of years ago, I came out as gay and I thought, I don't need that, but I do need that community actually. So
yep,
I think we are it's so shallow to say to somebody who you don't live their life, you don't need that.
Yes.
I do.
Yes,
I want people like that are like me. I love having diverse friends. I love having friends from when I used to go to church. I love having friends that are atheists. I love having people that vote for the Greens and people that vote for the Liberal Party. I love this part of my life. But yes. I want a few pockets of friends that really are just like me.
Yeah. And that is very natural, very human instinct there. And my wife and I call them PLUs, people like us, you know. and we've travelled around the world, you know, and we went to London and all the Aussies seemed to live in Earl's Court for some reason.
Yep,
and
yep.
we decided we didn't want to. We wanted to be more, you know, not in the obvious places.
Yep.
But you seek out people like us, yeah. you know, PLUs.
Yeah.
It's very natural.
Yeah.
And my daughter should have the same right
yes.
as everyone. Now also, Kate, you might think that imagine looking at my social group and saying, Phil, you're hanging out with people who are a bit too much like you.
Yeah.
And we sort of think your life would be more rich and diverse if yep. you had some different people in your mix. And I'd yep. say, well, you know, piss off. Yeah. I'll hang out with whoever I want. And that might be to my detriment. And I'm like you. I have lots of diversity. I like that. But yep. I like my PLUs as well.
Yeah.
And you can have your opinion about who I hang out with. But
it's when you don't want to hang out with someone okay. because of something. Then I really yeah. struggle. Like if you said to me, I don't really want to hang out with you because I don't really like middle-aged women who are a bit overweight and wear glasses, I'd be like, hey, you know. But if yeah. if you and I, you know, go out for coffee a couple of times and we're like, oh, we're not really hitting it off. We like each other, but we're probably not going to go out and do social things. That's fine. But I think all of us have that sense of complete injustice when it's like, I don't want to hang out with you because you have autism. I don't want to hang out with you because you're fat, you're gay, you're whatever.
Of course.
So I think I understand inclusion. I'm desperate for it, right?
Mm.
And I would love a world where people didn't fucking stare at people. That's all I want, right?
Yep. Yeah.
But we just have to do it little bit by little bit.
Yep. And this word segregated, you know, watch out for it because the Olympic Games is segregated. The Paralympics is segregated, you know. As you will know, and some listeners may know, in Sydney 2000, we held the Olympics and something happened at the Paralympics, which I think is a very short story. Can I tell it?
Yeah, yeah, go.
Okay, all right.
Yep.
Okay, so in Sydney 2000, Kathy Freeman, all the rest of it, wonderful. Okay.
Mm, mm.
The Paralympics followed, and the Paralympics had allowed the ID group, the intellectual disability yes. athlete group, to compete in a couple of events. You know, it's their platform, so they controlled it, and they kindly let the ID guys play. And Spain sent the men's basketball team down there, and they didn't have an impairment. They cheated, and they won the gold medal. And it was found out and discovered. And so what are we going to do? They looked around. Everyone else had done the right thing, you know, had recruited the right people, and Spain cheated. And so the Paralympic movement met to decide what to do, and their decision not ban Spain or whatever else, but ban all ID athletes from competing in the Paralympics.
All right, you're all getting punished.
Yeah, and so it wasn't until 2012 London that they decided to open the doors again. Now, I'm not criticizing the Paralympic movement, but the fact is that's that camp and they've built that event and it's a wonderful event and they're nervous about letting too many different people inside the room.
Yep.
And guess what? The ID group have gone now and set up the Virtus Games, which is just for people with an ID.
Yep.
So they've got – now, all these events – are worthy and no one should roll it all into bloody one, you know, and watch it thing because it would never end, you know. And so they're segregated events.
I mean, football, we just had the Women's World Cup. That's segregated because
yes,
it's only women playing.
Yes.
And as a woman, I'm like, I am so glad. I love that it's women's football. I love that I can see representation and small children growing up can see representation of amazing female athletes at a level that I have never seen in my whole life. And I love it. I think it's an awesome segregation. I don't like when commentators or whoever say, oh, they're only women, or they're only para athletes, or they're only, it's only the Virtus Games. That's what we don't like. But I love that I can go to, you know, Special Olympics and see an awesome soccer game, and then I can go to the MCG and watch St Kilda play. I can go to AFLW. Isn't this great? So many options.
You know what the inclusion movement, who are so upset about all this, are missing? The phrase is diversity and inclusion, D and I, right? Now, that means diversity of school choice, you know, diversity of sporting choices, diversity of living options, you know. That's how we provide inclusion, not by forcing everything into one box.
Yeah, and I think, of course, the most important people are the people that it's happening to, that live with the disability, work with, you know, your clients. If they don't like it there, no, they don't have to go, right? I appreciate there was a time in the past where children weren't given a voice and adults weren't given a voice, and that is wrong. And anyone that was involved in that would feel terrible now. We've moved on, thank God, as a society. But I also think, you know, my children go to mainstream school, and it's really interesting to me when parents come in and they're really unhappy about things that I think are ridiculous, and then they move their kids out. And I'm like, but the kids were quite happy. Right, but the parents aren't happy with the ATARs, or the parents aren't happy with the sports facilities, or whatever it is, I don't know. And then you're like, oh, some people don't listen to their children, no matter if their children have a disability or not. That's just parents. This is going to be a problem the world over. Anyway, I don't think we're going to solve this today.
I got to say, podcasts like this are so important to get these stories out, you know. I love this, the new media world, you know, where as someone who tries to get disability stories into the media and finds the media going, well, you know, is someone in a wheelchair? Because that sends an easy message to someone. And can someone articulate a nice, clean story? Because I've got to get this on the camera. And some stories are too hard.
We don't want invisible disabilities.
No, that's right. That's right.
So, podcasting is amazing because I often look at Mamma Mia, which is the biggest Australian female podcasting network. They are in the top charts every week. They're all women. And there was an immediate place in Australia that 15 years ago would have predicted that they would be the biggest podcasting network.
That's right.
Because we just have a voice. Mandy and I just sit here and talk. You don't have to listen, but you can if you want. And it just, podcasting really is a level playing field because you choose who you listen to, and the people are speaking and they're listening.
Yep, it's wonderful.
Do you want to say anything before we finish? Is there anything about your service that you want to tell us?
Yes, one last story, the philosophy behind us, I guess. As I thought about the mission and all the rest of it, you know, I remembered Phoebe getting up to play in the playground. Again, she's very social, but there are three reactions from kids. One third of kids would sort of play with her pretty happily. One third of kids would literally run away in fear and make a face. And the third, the middle group, were like not quite sure what to do, you know, and you could see them. And so my wife or I would get up and say, look, this is Phoebe and she can hear you, but she doesn't talk, you know. Oh, why doesn't she talk? So there was some engagement or some education, if you like. And then we'd say she uses Auslan to communicate and this is the sign for dog or something, and and they go, oh, that's so interesting. And the conversion rate was really high, right? So the philosophy at Woolara, we can think of ourselves as a social change agency, and we're trying to do things that reach and engage and convert the middle third. That's what we're about, right?
That's what
the farm's about. That's why we do. Please look at Woolara TV. If you go on YouTube, you'll see Woolara TV. There's 400 videos there. We've done TV shows. We love getting, like you, love getting these stories out so people can see what's happening in inside Woolara and hear from our clients as much as possible. So let's change the middle third.
Let's change. What a great idea. Yes, let's change the middle third. And all of that will be in the show notes, I'm sure. Auntie Lisa will put it all in the show notes and you'll just be able to click on it and go to YouTube. Wonderful. You won't even have to Google it, Peace. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been lovely talking to you. I know Mandy's disappointed. She's like, damn. But anyway, this is what happens in P-Life. It's unpredictable.
That's right. Well, lovely talking to you too. And you're both very welcome to come down the farm.
We will. I will come down. Tour. Yep,
100%. Love to see you.
Especially as this weather warms up.
I will come down.
Thanks, Kate.
All right. Thank you so much. That was a really interesting conversation. I know there are going to be things in that that some people won't agree with, but that's what conversation is. And the older I get, the more I love having challenging conversations. I don't like fighting. I don't like people being mean, but I like hearing different points of view and I like hearing all the different arguments. And I hope you've really enjoyed it. If you live in Melbourne, go check out that amazing sage farm. I think I will definitely go down there. I love the peninsula and maybe I'll do some social stories down there, Peas, and you'll see them on our Instas. Have a great week. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.